Welcome back to the Cook and Bartender Podcast with our host, Adam and Tiny. They'll be talking about bars, restaurants, hospitality industry, what you didn't know, what you might want to know, and now on with today's subject.
Lead us to the promised land.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Cook and Bartender from Tiny's World Headquarters in Hayward, Wisconsin.
I remember that button was.
What's happening, Tiny? How are you today?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. Hello to everybody out there that still listens to us.
Right? Well, our last one did pretty good.
Yeah?
I mean, it wasn't like a huge amount of people, but better than I thought after being gone.
Cool.
Our schedules are not matching like it used to.
It's kind of funny we do a podcast, but I still, even after over a year of doing these and whatever 30, 40 episodes we've done, I still find it challenging to listen to myself.
It is hard to listen to yourself.
You know, and I've rarely finished one of our podcasts because even though like I'm here, I'm comfortable on the mic talking. Mm-hmm. To hear myself when I listen to it back, I have to shut it off halfway through. I'm like, I don't like this. I'm uncomfortable.
I've gotten really used to this in my own voice. So
yeah,
of course I edit stuff.
Right on.
But speaking of editing, this podcast is going to be a little different. I might go through and edit a little bit, but it's pretty much going to be raw.
Yeah, we're going to go a little raw, unfiltered. We didn't really have I think we're going to start doing some podcasts without like the scripted notes and all that. Freestyle it.
I'm just going to freestyle it.
Speaking of the podcast, I was talking to my therapist yesterday.
Yeah.
Who has a podcast. And
I've listened to it. It's pretty good.
It's actually really excellent. It helps me get through a lot of things. But it's been about 6 weeks since I had a session with her.
Uh-huh.
So she was kind of like re-catching up on like my life. And I had mentioned the podcast earlier when I started therapy with her.
Uh-huh.
And I brought it up yesterday and I saw her eyes light up and she took her pen and she wrote it down. So I think she's going to check us out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. Like, and her podcast, their format is fucking awesome. Like it's very similar to a lot of our like where we start talking just like this and then we kind of hit the topic.
And
then we go a little circle and like, it's like friends talking, you know, and their format is very listenable. It reminds me of ours. So I'm kind of hoping that she like checks out some of our better earlier episodes when we were going in hard on it.
And she also learned more about you too, probably.
Yeah, right. Which is good. It's kind of scary at the same time.
Don't want to learn any more than I need.
But
to
you
know
what? Yeah, right. But her personality and my personality are very similar. I thought I said fucking shit a lot, and then I have my therapist who's like double sailor curse.
Double sailor.
Like, this is fucking great.
Right on. Well, to that, let's cheers before we forget the cheers.
Oh, yeah. Cheers to your clear whiskey.
Yeah. Ghost. Yeah.
Jim Beam Ghost. Jim Beam Ghost. Tiny just showed me that on the phone. It's a clear whiskey. I really am itching to try it now. I've never seen a clear whiskey.
It's good. It's different.
Yeah. So Jim Beam Ghost. Give that a shot. I'm drinking this Prairie.
Prairie Vodka.
Prairie Vodka out of Minnesota.
Yep.
Organic, gluten-free. Although, to the world out there, all vodka is gluten-free. FYI, don't fall for them label. What's new with you, brother?
Still working on my future. That's soda burp. Still working on the future, trying to get that going. Got a business partner now, so that's a pretty high in my life right now.
That's exciting.
You know, somebody that knows what he's done in business, he's been a businessman for quite a while in his life.
Cool.
You know, so then there's me that, not a businessman, that I mean, I can run a restaurant, but I don't know how to...
Right, do businessy stuff.
Do businessy stuff. Like, how does that work again?
How do you do the businessy part of it?
Yep.
You didn't major in businessy?
I didn't major in business. I majored how to flip eggs or whatever. How to cook for people and make them happy.
Breakfast business.
Ugh. I really hate breakfast.
Actually, that actually brings me to a good topic that I've been meaning to ask you about.
Yeah?
So when I was younger, I had a vision when I was in my teens and 20s, I really wanted to go to culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of talked out of it by my parents who were like, no, get a fucking business these types of thing. And that led to just fucking partying because I had no fucking passion for it.
Yep.
But what was, like, tell me a little bit more, like, what is how does culinary school work? How long is the program? Like, what was the regimen?
There's different programs. Back in the day, because I went to the Culinary Institute of America, Hyde Park, New York, and that's before they only had one school.
Okay.
Now they have three, four schools? I don't remember. They only had was 21 months. I went there for 21 months. You learn how to cook. Okay. You took a few months off to go into the world and do your own thing. Then you had to come back to do more cooking at the school, which is cool. And it, honestly, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really want to learn how to cook, go there. They'll teach you. It's expensive.
Right.
But, you know, on the other hand, you got to remember they have $1 million warehouse downstairs. And that's not including meat or fish.
Yeah.
That's just everything else you need. That's $1 million. It's probably more now. I mean, what do you want? They have it. They teach how to cook, then not to be a chef. I mean, I think a chef takes a while, takes more time, more.
Like in the field?
In the field stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because they give you a good basis, a line basis of how to cook stuff, how to do stuff, how to do this, that, the other thing. But then there's schooling, then there's also cooking in the real world. It's totally different.
Yeah.
I mean, probably Thomas Keller is as close as I can say, but like, that'd be like school cooking, something unique, cool.
Right.
You know, you have to have your vegetables cut at certain length, certain squares, or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But out in the industry, it's a little bit different.
Is culinary school, is it like the only word to pass by, is it kind of an intense program? Or
it's very intense, yeah.
Or is it super chill? I was wondering.
No, it's very intense because you're, how can I say it? Because every class you go to is a different chef. So you got to learn that chef what he likes. Because like when I was going to school, we'd always talk to the people in front of us. Hey, what's going on with this guy? What's his gig or what's her gig? And like the one person's like, oh man. The chef, when you do your hollandaise, you know, for testing your hollandaise sauce,
yep.
Put a little salt on top because he likes the salty hollandaise sauce. Otherwise, it says it needs more salt all the time. So we did make our hollandaise sauce, and we'd take, oh, that's really tasty. We would take a little salt, sprinkle on top,
nice.
Bring it up to him. He'll taste it. Oh, that's really good.
You had to figure them out.
Yeah.
Kind of like any teacher. I mean,
any teacher, any chef or anything. Because no matter which job you have, each chef has a different way of doing stuff.
Yes, 100%.
Even though you know, you're like, that's flipping wrong.
Yep. Right.
What the hell are you doing this way? You can do it this way. It's easier, cheaper, and but no, the chef wants it done this way.
Yes, I've seen that.
Do it that way.
I haven't spent a ton of time as a cook. I've been more in the front of the house. But I have worked in kitchens before, and I do. Chefs are fucking particular about the weirdest things sometimes.
And we're pretty much, most chefs are somewhat OCD or, you know, things have to be in a certain spot, everything.
Yep.
Has to be cut a certain way. I had to learn that a long time ago. And I look at my past when I was a little kid, because I was talking to my mom, whatever, and she's like, oh, yeah, you had your indoor toys and your outdoor toys. Your outdoor toys could come in, but your indoor toys could not go out. And some of your indoor toys could not be shared with anybody else for you. You're the only one who played with them. And I'm like, huh, that kind of sounds like me right now as a chef. Here, you can use this crappy knife. You're not using this
one.
Don't
touch this one. That's funny.
So, but, yeah, it teaches you a lot. Cool. But it also... It gives you a good basis to become and to go out in the world and just do stuff.
Right.
You kind of, I did that. You know, the sad part is for everything that I learned in school, you lose like 60% of it.
I think that's with any
anything.
Degree,
so like,
you know.
I just feel kind of like, that sucks. I wonder what I learned I forgot.
Right. Yeah. Thinking back, what am I not utilizing in my own kitchen that I learned whatever years ago? Now, that's kind of cool. Like I said, I was when I was younger, I was like, as I was getting closer to graduating high school, what the fuck do I want to do? And I really, in my heart, I wish if I go back in time, I would have just told my parents, hey, I'm going to culinary school. Because
I would not change. I'd go back to that culinary school.
That's cool. No, I know. I've never met somebody who actually went to culinary school, so that was super. I always was curious what it was like.
Yeah, know? It's pretty intense. Cause, I mean, especially the culinary in America, I mean, they have a high standards. At least they used to. I don't know about anymore. I'm pretty sure they do.
I would hope so.
I hope so. Not talking bad about any. Not talking bad about him. I loved him. But you had to learn and do. And they did the building block thing. So you learn one class and you take that and move it on to the next. So you're learning all these steps how to become a household. When you walked in there, basically what you did is you forget everything you learned how to do when you were regular cooking.
Yep.
Just like, okay. And then the chefs will just take you and move you up. You know, teach a little here, a little here, a little here, a little there.
Cool.
And then, even nowadays, I don't know at all about cooking. Like, friends are like, hey, what's blah, 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 and I'm like, what? I mean, the world is becoming, especially with the internet and everything, and the grocery stores are finding a lot more stuff, and I'm like...
And newer techniques
and technologies
and stuff like that, yeah.
I know a guy, one of my good friends, and he's more of the, not the chemist, but he's more high-end, I call him the chemist chef, because he makes, little drops of balsamic vinegar, it looks like caviar, and puts some stuff or whatever, and I'm like, that's cool.
The science cooking.
Yeah, but stuff. I'm not. That's not me. You know, I'm not the higher end. I mean, I can do high end food, more of the old school supper club high end food than the newer high end food. If I had to do it, I could do it. I mean, pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, menus and I mean, so I'm not even a chef, but I mean, I could look back at you know, I watch a lot of cooking shows and like I've been in industry, but like seeing some of the shit that's done today that 30 years ago was not even a thing. It's definitely evolved.
Yeah, I mean, it evolves every year. And sometimes I'm like, I don't really want to be part of this trend right now.
Right. Yeah. You've been in the game long enough where you have your ways and your style, you know, why change now?
Yep. And every cook, I mean, even cook, chef, I mean, you could be a chef and still run a greasy spoon.
Yep.
But you have a good burger, good hash browns, whatever. And that's the way you are.
Yes.
You're still a chef, but you're not.
But people are still going to come there for that because your whatever, your platter, the way you cook it is chef level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's why I go to certain places, even if it is for a breakfast or, you know, a burger. I mean, I've been to just random ass fucking little that looked like a dive bar and had the greatest burger. And then you realize that there's an actual chef
behind it.
And you wouldn't know it walking in. You wouldn't be like, oh, it's a fucking hamburger. You bite it and you're like, what's the magic? It's the chef behind it. And that's pretty cool.
Like, was it last week? I had somebody's like, oh, your burger's really good. You must smash it. I said, never. I take it and I flip it once. Put it on my flat top. Season it. Put it on a flat top. Let it sit. Flip it. Put whatever on it. Cheese, whatever. Let it sit for a little or whatever and then pull it off. And I mean, why do I want to squeeze it? I mean, when you squeeze it, all the juices run out.
And that's a trendy thing now, like the smash burgers and all that are kind of like in the last 5 years have really grown. There's chains called Smash Burger out there. And they're good in their own way, but just a regular burger flipped once.
Flip once, man.
Throw the cheese on. Where I work, I call it the cheese clock. That's how I know when it's ready.
Yep.
If I'm flipping it at the right time, then I don't have to. I could have 15 burgers on the grill and be talking to customers and doing whatever, and I don't have to think about, is it ready? The cheese tells me when.
Yeah, right?
It's the cheese clock. I train new people, and they're like, cheese clock? What the fuck is that? And I'm like, trust me.
I took a year, because honest God, of everything I've ever cooked in my life, burgers are one of the hardest things for me to cook, to get temperatures. I don't know why, just one of those weird things. But when you told me to do the cheese thing, I'm like, interesting. So I've been doing that. Flip it, throw the cheese on it, let it cook, and I know when my cheese melts a certain way. It's like a medium well burger. Like,
as long as you're flipping it at the right time, if you master that, like where you see the juices, and you're like, if you're flipping it at the right time, the cheese will tell you when it's ready, when it's medium, perfect, like
it is
juicy, but not undercooked or overcooked. And I use the term the cheese clock. Mm-hmm. One of my random ass weird training terms I use at work that are going to be famous one day.
I think they already are famous.
They probably are.
At least in my head, they're famous.
But burgers. I did work at one place once where we did, they were, right now where we work, everything comes out. We say it on our menu. It's going to be medium to medium well.
That's
our target. But I did work at one place once where you can get rare out to well done and everything in between. And I always struggled with that temperature. See, I like where I work now because we just do them all the same. Obviously, if you want it well done, I'm going to leave it on there. That's easy. But I'm glad that we don't do like medium rare and all that shit because the burgers were tough. I had an easier time doing it with steaks when I was cooking it.
Oh, steaks are easy
at a restaurant than burgers. And you wouldn't think that burgers would be that challenging, but sometimes they're just tricky.
I think burgers because they're ground up meat and if they're well done or raw, they still have that kind of spongy. They don't really change their texture or their feel.
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting point because I was trying to explain this to someone at work that one of our newer employees and. I was talking to her and I was like, you know, like she's really, this is her first commercial cooking gig and she's really like wants it to be right, like super passionate and she's ready to jump on the grill. But you could tell that's that like uncertainty. So she's always having me like, hey, are these good? Do you think these are good? And I was talking to her and she looked at me kind of like I was batshit crazy. But with the ground meat thing, I could pick up my burgers with the spatula and just the feel of the texture on the spatula tells me if it's ready to rock.
See, that's
or I'll drop it off the spatula and the way it hits the flat top, like I'm like, that's good. And when it still needs a few more minutes, you can tell by the way it just made the sound it makes or the feel on the spatula. It's super weird.
Hey, I mean, if it works, it works.
I'm fucking weird.
Everybody has weird different things to do.
And I was trying to like tell her that, and I thought in my head, I was like, halfway through my conversation, I was like, I'm probably confusing the shit out of her. Like, this is not trainable. It's just something that after being here for so many years, I can tell. But how do you tell somebody to, like, put a burger on a spatula and the way your fingers feel based on the weight of the fucking texture of the burger? You know what I mean?
I guess that's the same way. Like, when I was doing steaks, I could, like, look at them. I knew I was doing steaks. But all I had to do was, like, when I flipped them, I knew how the steak felt by flipping it.
Gotcha.
You know, I didn't have to go and push my finger on it. Yep. Because I just knew by using the tongs, flipping it, do it for so long that you know.
Yeah, you do it enough times, you just kind of.
There's like a sensor in your fingers, like, oh, that's.
Yeah,
you
know. And that's a good way to put it. Like a weird electrical sensor. Yep. Like,
right. 2 more minutes.
Yep. So funny.
I don't know.
The energy from my fingers travels through the spatula, feels the burger, and it comes back to my fingers. Yep. And then I could tell if it's good.
Right on. It's so weird.
It's my super fucking power. What is your super power? Electrical impulses between me and the burger.
Right. And the cheese. Don't forget the cheese.
And the cheese clock.
The cheese clock.
What time is it? Cheese time.
Yeah. It's done, boys and girls. Ran out of time.
Yeah, look at that sweaty, melty cheese. Burger is perfectly just over medium right now.
Right? I did go out to eat with my friends last week, and he ordered a medium rare burger. And I looked at him. I said, you know their burgers come from frozen at this place. And he's like, well, they should be able to do it. And I said, no. I said, even a frozen burger, you got to be like a genius to. I mean, there's probably a way to do it. Don't ask me.
Yeah, we do frozen patties.
And I'm like, it's going to come out medium well to medium at the best.
I can do, we do frozen patties where we work. We really won't honor the medium rare to the rare burger. Yep. There are a few guests that I've been there for 6 years. So like that, if I'm cooking, I will do it for them. And I have mastered like a medium rare frozen burger. But I won't do it for everyone. But there is a way, but it's not easy.
No, so, I can imagine there is a way to do it, but
yeah, and that's all about the flipping time, and it's a different cheese clock.
Yep,
for me, it's like a digital and analog cheese clock. Right, I guess. But I can pull it off, but I don't like to because you don't know if it's still gonna be cold in the middle, and that's not what you don't want. So I don't train anybody that works with me there, but I can do it. Do you want a rare to medium rare, still warm in the middle, frozen patty? I can fucking pull it off, but I don't like to.
I don't know if I ever pulled it off. I know I've told people, I'm like, I'll do the best I can do. You know?
Right.
And that's about all I'm going to say.
And it kind of depends on the thickness of the patty, too, and all that. You know, and I've been working it, like I said, at my establishment for 6 years now. So I figured out my burger cook. I know the meat. And I think that depends on different
I like styles your burgers
of
here.
Meat and everything. Well, they're good because they're cooked on the flat top, cast iron that's been there for years.
Yep. It's well seasoned.
Yeah, butter and onions and bacon and all. Like, it's got decades of seasoning in there. And then there's something I like better. I like a burger on a flat top better than a burger cooked over flame.
So do I.
Because they cook in their own juices, and if you do overdo it a little bit more, it still has that juiciness to it.
Yep.
Where if you overcook something on a flame grill, it's dry. I was at another restaurant in the area that I wanted to check out that just opened, and it was a fucking beautiful burger. Half pound, hand patty. Like, it looked like God's gift to the earth. My mouth was just like smiling. But then I bit it, and I could tell that it was a flame cooked a little overdone. It was dry.
Oh, that sucks.
So dry. And like, the appearance was good, and the whatever they did for the seasoning was great. Big, juicy bun, golden buttered. But it was just, I was disappointed. It was going to my mouth, and I was like, yeah, party time. And then I bit it, and I was like, ooh, fucking, this is like a SOS pad.
Oh, no. going down.
But that's why I like our burgers at ours. It's a cast iron and the flat top burger, I think, is one of the best ways, in my opinion, to eat a burger.
Yep.
They're always juicy. Even if you fuck it up a little bit and overcook it slightly, it's still in its pool of grease.
Pool and stuff. You know? And I've also cooked burgers, and I get the onions nice and onions and mushrooms, and I'm like, well, the mushrooms and onions are a little bit longer, so I take them, push them out, put the burger on top, because the burger, well, then the onions and stuff will sear below them. I don't know if it does anything.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that's kind of cool. To them.
Right? Well, the mushrooms and onions are a little bit longer, and the burger's almost done, you know, so I'll push them out and put that, and then, of course, then the juices of the burger fall in and juice onions and makes
and
them.
Then the onion steam goes probably into the burger patty. I mean, look at White Castle. They steam their burgers and their onions together.
That's the weirdest thing.
But I would love White Castle. It's my favorite fucking fast food. You taste the onions. If you took the patty off and took the onions off and just ate the patty, you taste the steam onions that builds into the beef. And that's
good.
It's magical. Now I want White Castle.
If it wasn't 2 hours away.
2 hours and 14 minutes, I believe, is what I Googled. Hinckley, Minnesota would be our closest one.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Do I have to go to Hinckley today now?
I hope not.
I don't want to drive 2 and 5 hours for a White Castle, but some days I'm tempted.
You can get them in the grocery store, but they're not the same, though.
Yeah, they're not. I do fall back on those once in a while, like an emergency. I grew up on White Castles.
Yeah.
And Italian beef sandwiches, so, like, I have to fall back on the frozen ones because my crave is there. I just, like, those days, I'm like...
Well, I'm driving for...
I feel like a drug addict sometimes where I'm just like, I need White Castle in my veins.
I might drive 40 minutes each way to go and get chicken wings tonight. there's a bar that has chicken wings, and they're pretty supposed to be pretty good.
Nice.
And I went there last week.
Yeah.
And we walked in, they were out. And I'm like, oh, man.
You should call them first.
I should call them.
In this day and age, you got to call. If you're going for a chicken product, call ahead.
Yep, I should. Maybe I will do that.
We've been open for, that's kind of funny. We've been open, should it be 2 weeks only?
Yep.
2 weeks on Thursday, and I'm already on my third different brand of chicken tenders.
Oh, no.
They're out of stock. So in 14, not even 14 days of being open, I've had to use three different chicken tenders.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. I'm like, that's how it was. That's why we got rid of wings on our menu, because it was just, we couldn't get it. We would have been on wing number 40 by now.
You know? When I left on vacation early April, a case of eggs was like $18, $19, you know, maybe $20 a case. And then when I got back, I ordered them. And they're like, oh, you're going to be in a shock because it's kind of expensive. I said, well, how much are they? Because, you know, they had the bird flu that went through down Southern State. And they're like, $52 a case. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
In 3 weeks, they went from 18 to 52.
Yeah. Have you looked at the eggs at Walmart recently?
No, I try not to.
It's empty.
That's
my last four trips. Like, I the first time, because I read about the egg shortage and all that. And then 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago.
Yep.
Like when I read about it, then I was at Walmart. There was like two cartons of eggs left. That's pretty big.
That is huge. They had all kinds of different eggs there too.
So I bought one container of, you know, super cage free organic. steal your wallet price. Yep. So I bought those, and then the last two times I've been back there, it's been a little bit better. But that section would hold 500 cases of eggs.
Oh, at least
there's
that's
like
huge.
12 boxes containers of eggs. So I just got
crazy.
So I'm eating eggs that I overpaid for, and even their basic eggs,
yeah,
which used to be like $1.19 for a dozen, they're up to like $2.99 a dozen.
Wow.
And that's just the basic white egg.
Just the basic white egg.
Yeah. So
that's that insane.
It's been a wild 2 years with,
and
it,
it's only going to get worse, kind
of. I read an article the other, maybe about 5 days ago, and it was one of the largest beef producing plants in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Brazil or something. But the president of that company was interviewed, and he said it to expect beef prices to continually rise for at least 2 more years.
Yep.
And they're insane already.
It's stupid.
It's going to get to the, I'm hoping the world gets used to it, because I'm still noticing a lot of people, like, I do the menu pricing.
Yep.
I know why we have to charge $13.87 for this burger or whatever, $13.99. Yep. The average person that doesn't go out to eat often, that's not used to the, like, sticker shock or those increasing prices since the COVID stuff. I can see the look on their face sometimes, or like you give them their bill.
Like,
you could say they're scared over, like, whoa. I'm hoping that as this continues, the average person just gets used to it, because it's not going to change, I don't think, for a while.
No.
But those people that are not regular go out to eat people, I feel like very soon we'll start pricing them out of the fucking market. Like, they're never going to go out and eat.
I feel bad when when I do my tickets here, and I'm like going, when I did my, you know, just say my corned beef, my corned beef hash I used. When I first started, it was $2.35 a pound, which I thought it was expensive back then. Then it went up to like $3 or something, and I just kind of gave them a little less beef. Now, it's almost $7 a pound, and I just redid my menu not too long ago, and at $5 a pound, now it's up to $7 a pound.
Wow.
I'm going,
it's nuts.
I'm like, and that's just for a piece of crap. It's been a love brisket, don't get me wrong. But it's, you know, it used to be like 99 cents.
Yeah.
Now it's
not 99 cents.
Yeah, $5 a pound. Then you look at your tenderloin, which is smaller and a lot less. That's 20, 30 bucks a pound now.
Yeah, it is pretty wild out there. The good thing, I've surveyed some family members and friends who are not in this industry, and because I was trying to pick their brains on, like, when I was doing my menu pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm not comfortable with these prices. Like, I'm going to get feedback. But at the same time, we have a formula that we use.
Yep.
And every restaurant does to stay profitable. Like, we have to price it that way. But I did, I talked to my dad and a couple friends and some relatives and who aren't in the business. And I said, hey, when you sit down nowadays, like, what do you look at a menu? What do you see? And all of them did say that, like, we expect that what we went there for 2 years ago is going to be $5 more.
Yep.
And that made me feel better. Because I'm nice, like, I don't want to...
I feel like I'm ripping them off, you know, but...
Yeah, but we know how to run a business.
Yep.
So we have to do that to stay afloat. But I do, I feel guilty. I'm like,
I got to make profit somewhere.
You know, I mean, I've taken even some of our better-selling menu items, like their Italian beef and all that. I chose not to have them on the menu because I felt bad, almost. Like, even though our cost is going up, so we have to do it, I still felt good. Like, I don't want to charge $17 for... because that's our price. We don't make everything.
I feel really bad. I raised my coffee price, and it's not that expensive because it's endless amount of coffee. You can sit here and drink a pot of coffee, and that's you pay for it. And that's what it is. It's not that expensive. It's cheaper than going to Starbucks, but you know it's roasted right here in Hayward, so it's a better product than like Folgers or Folgers. Not even the same class level as this coffee I use here.
Do you use a local?
Yeah, Midwest Roasters.
Oh, nice. Cool.
They're right down the road.
Awesome.
I get it fresh. You know, nice. It's fresh right out of the fresh ground and everything.
I'm going to have to come here for coffee one day.
You should.
Sweet.
We'll put some alcohol in there for all both of us.
Why does this coffee taste? It tastes like Bailey's.
I don't know.
That Midwest Roasters, they really know how to make coffee.
They certainly do. But I raised the price, you know, and I raised it like $1.25 a cup or, you know, for whatever. And then these people came in and they said, oh, you see you raised the price of coffee. Yep. Had you know the price of everything's going up. That's pretty impressive because you haven't raised it in 3 years. I said, yeah, thanks. Well, then it didn't show up for a long time. And I'm like, wonder what. So I was just leaking it one day and a person walked in and, oh, yeah, that family doesn't come anymore because your coffee prices are too high.
Right. We start to price them out of the game in a little
thing. Wow.
And that was my fear with the menu pricing.
I was like, I feel bad. I'm like, well.
Like in the grand scheme of things, it's a bottomless cup. You do go to a local.
Yeah.
High quality coffee person. You're not doing Great Value or Folgers or whatever.
Or anything like Cisco brand coffee, whatever.
Right. Nothing wrong with Great Value coffee or anything. We did the same with our soda gun. When you get soda off the gun, it's unlimited refills versus if you get a can.
Yep.
We had to pump it up 50 cents.
You had to.
Just because our syrup boxes went up so much. But even being open for 2 weeks, I had someone say, really? Like, we used to charge $2 and it's unlimited. You got Sprite? Yeah. Oh, you Sprite Zero off the gun, you get all you want. 40 glasses, $2. We bumped it to $2.50, and I got one person who was like, $2.50 for a soda. It's unlimited.
It's unlimited, yep.
You know, so, I mean, I get it, but that's where I was going with that conversation, is I feel like the people that don't understand the back supply chain issues that are going to stop going out because they don't understand why we had to go 50 cents on the soda or you had to go up a quarter on the unlimited coffee.
Yep.
It's fucking great coffee. Or why this burger was $9.99 2 years ago and it's $13.99 now.
Right.
And that's my fear is like, what's the tipping point for us in the business or like for you? You own your own business. I manage a business.
Yeah, what is the tipping? Where is that?
Because of the supply chain issues, are more restaurants going to fold or is the general public going to adapt to the higher prices and keep, and you know, I don't know which way it's going to go, but it's on that. I feel like it's on that brink.
I think, and then this is kind of a weird scenario, and I've thought about this for years, because every time people raise the cigarette prices, they're like, oh, we're not going to go smoke anymore. Then 2 weeks later, I see they're smoking again, you know? So they're absorbing some price of cigarettes somewhere.
That's more of an addiction, though.
Yeah, but food is...
Food is an addiction, too.
To some people, to whatever, but...
But you can make, like, I guess...
I said it's a weird analogy.
It is. That's interesting, because I remember when I started smoking, like, really young, like 14 years old. And so in my early teens, and I remember cigarettes were still in the dollar something range. And I said, man, if they ever go to $2, I'm quitting. I can't afford that shit. What did I just pay yesterday at Hillman's? Fucking $9.50 for a pack of smokes. And with no, like, care... That's a little more of an addiction thing. What I'm afraid of in the food industry is there's a lot of people that go out to the bars and restaurants often. There's more families and people in the world that rarely go to a restaurant. They do it once a month to treat themselves. Like, you know, like it's more of an event.
Yeah.
I feel like those are the ones that we might lose.
Well, I know the people that used to come here, you know, there's a lot of resorts around here that and the cabins have ovens and stuff. They're bringing their own food or buying food here. They're only going out once instead of like two or three times.
Yeah, we're getting that too. Like I get more requests for like, hey, can I borrow a crock pot? Because they're feeding their group in our cabin. You know, I see a lot more. Maybe it's just in my head, but I feel like last summer especially, like I saw more people using the grills at the cabins versus coming in for a burger.
Yep.
And that's like the market or the clientele niche that I'm afraid of losing is like they love coming where I'm at or coming to your place that once a month. Now it's just because that's all they can afford often, or they're just not like go out to eat all the time people. But a lot of them, it's that's that treat. We're going to splurge
one time.
But now, when is it going to get too expensive for that family that could barely afford it once a month to treat themselves? They're going to go away then, like the coffee. That scares me. It's not the large percentage of our business or any restaurant's business, but
nowadays, a little percentage is the one that's going to hurt you.
Right, exactly.
So.
two checks a week that you didn't get, $280 tabs. Yep. I mean, that adds up in the restaurant world. It's not a get-rich-quick program.
Nope.
We do it because we love it.
It is kind of a weird... Then another thing, too, is you're also paying for the dishwasher soap. You're paying for the ketchup, the mustard, the other thing, which that's all going up.
Yeah.
You're not just paying for the hamburger. And you might not want to have ketchup on your hamburger, but you're still paying for it in a way.
We have to price it in.
It's priced into your burger.
Yeah, and we touched on that in one of our early episodes. We talked about menu pricing, and that's where I'm at now. I like that we do it, and we're going to be more focused and try to do it monthly with the way the fluctuation is right now. But yeah, I mean, there's 10 cents added in for condiments. Whether you use them or not, we still have to price it in. Because there's one person that might not use ketchup on their fries, and then there's one person that's going to use a whole bottle.
And the one guy that goes, uses a whole bottle for two dips of fries. You're like, what the hell?
So you still have to include it in your menu price. Yep. And like you said, that's a lot of the back end stuff is the soaps and the dish soap and the plates and it's the napkins and all of that. Stuff. And all of that's gone up too. Or is out of stock, so you're forced to buy the more expensive one. Napkins, for example, it sounds fucking basic. We've used the same napkin forever. Well, guess what? I can't get napkins for a month. We're a restaurant. We need napkins. And because I use a certain distributor, now I'm forced to buy what's available because of the shortage. And I'm like, oh, that's $20 more a case for the same amount of napkins. But I had to have it. So that has to be kind of priced into the menu too. The uncertainty has to be priced in. What if I can't get it? Or what if bacon goes up $10 more a case? Because it's been doing that every week, up and down, left and right. You're just like,
what the hell?
Yeah, you got to prepare to stay afloat.
Yep. It's gas prices.
Yes. Wow. I'm so fortunate. I sometimes dread I shit on this area a lot because it's not super stimulating for me. I love where I work, but the area is too slow. But then I was thinking the other day, and this is a shout out to my therapist because she's really trying to train my brain to think of positives.
Yep.
And I oftentimes can get stuck in
the negative.
Yeah, F this, F that. But then I realized I only have 10 miles each way to go to work. And I'm not sitting in stop and go traffic where I'm burning gas. And I'm like, I can still get 2 weeks of work out of a tank of gas. And I'm thinking about all the other jobs in big cities that I had where it was a 45-minute commute plus you're stuck in traffic. And that bill, that gas bill has to be fucking crazy right now for those people.
That's where you buy the electric cars.
Right. Yeah, I feel like that might be the shift towards electric.
I mean,
you live on site. You have to go to town. It's 20 miles each way. You do that probably, once a week?
Twice, if I'm lucky.
We're super fortunate right now in the gas world to be here.
Right. And plus, your 10 miles is probably quicker than the people in the city that drive 4 miles.
Yep. It
takes them 45 minutes.
Yeah. And they're sitting at the trip. Yeah, right. I used to drive, this is many years ago, 20 years ago. I used to drive 14 miles each way to work in Chicago, and very often, mostly on a Friday, those 14 miles would take me 2.5 hours.
Right.
Because I was stuck on a 4-lane highway, literally in park. And that's just gas burning. That's gas burning.
Yep.
And it's hot. It's summer. And you're like, fuck. And
you don't want to turn your car out because you burn your
ass. Yeah. With everything going on, I feel because we're unfiltered and just out of... Sidekick right now, we don't care. The world right now is so unstable. You got Russia going bananas, you got oil, you're gonna have grain shortages
because of Ukraine,
you got gas prices, China's questionable. And then I'm I was actually joking with my dad on the phone. I'm like, it's gonna be World War III starting soon.
I just said that a couple nights ago, and this guy says, you better shut the fuck up.
My dad left, he's like, you know what though? He's like, where you guys are at? He's like, you're the safest of anyone you know.
Yes.
They're not bombing Hayward.
No.
They're going to target Chicago and New York and cities. Nope. And I was like, yeah, if World War III happens, and this is part of my trying to be optimistic about living up here because I struggle with it often. I was like, you know what? I don't have to pay a shitload for gas. And if nukes start flying everywhere, no one's nuking Hayward.
No.
I mean, actually, I said that I might have given them an idea. Hopefully this podcast does not carry that far. it's weird being up here. A lot of the shit going on in the world, we're away from.
Yep.
We're in our own little fucking bubble, which
we are in our own little bubble.
Yeah. And I used to look at it I miss the universe. I miss the cities. I miss the things. And I'm trying to retrain my brain to say, you know what? Right now.
Yeah, pretty good.
At 43 years old, I'm this is the safest place of all the places I've lived that I could be right now.
We're not necessarily militarized stuff.
Yeah. So financially, safety, and just community-wise, this is all right. So props to Sawyer County for, might be the first time in 6 years I said that.
Well, I'll write that in my diary tonight. Dear diary.
Dear Tiny's diary. Yep. I would like to read your diary.
if you can read my handwriting.
Which would be impossible.
Yeah, it would be.
I've seen you write.
It's disgusting. It's getting worse.
the behind-the-scenes mind of Tiny. That could be frightening.
Or interesting.
Or really interesting. Right. Well, if when you pass away, if I'm still around, I'll make a documentary. I'll find your diary. I'll turn it into a documentary of Tiny's life. It'll be called Tiny's Diary.
Tiny's Diary.
Yeah.
I wonder if it'd be interesting.
I was telling one of our new hires some stories about my life with some shit that just like happened to me, and it's all like happenstance. Like, and she straight up looked at me and was like, "You need to fucking write a book because this has to be a movie." And she's young; she's like 22. And I was I was like, to me, these stories were just like, I've told them enough and like relived them enough that to me they're normal. My life's my life is fucking batshit. The weirdest shit has happened to me, and I put myself in some situations, but some shit just happens. And her look in her eyes and was like, what did she say? It was the best line. She said, "You shouldn't be here today."
Yeah, right.
And I was like, what? She's like, "Yeah, you should be dead." I was like, "I know. That's why this is a fun story. Like, that's what makes it cool." Yeah. Super interesting. Sorry, that was a side ramble.
That's a squirreling.
That's my ADHD squirrels.
Yeah. That's what this whole new.
And there's a literal squirrel out right outside.
I don't know if it's a red squirrel. I might have to find a new home.
Yeah, it looked like a normal one.
Oh, good. Normal ones are good. I don't like the...
Those red ones will get a... They will tear up a building.
Oh, yeah. One of my friends lost his whole shop because the red squirrel went in and ate the wires. And
yeah.
Middle of the night, caught on fire and done.
Yeah, in Arizona, we had a red squirrel issue sometime in the last year or two, and we had to get someone out here with traps and shit because like, they will get into the attic and the roof. They'll eat through the wood, the wires, everything. Yeah.
They eat through anything.
Yep.
Bastards.
Those sneaky bastards.
Well, this is fun.
Yeah, this is fun, man. This is cool. I like this new concept. So for those that still follow us from the beginning, we're just going to do a few episodes and test out this more loose.
This loosey-goosey kind of thing.
I think the way we're doing it, oftentimes me and Tiny will talk on the phone. We're not recording. And we'll brainstorm and spitball and just like have friend conversations that usually tie to the industry anyways because we're in it. So we decided that we're going to make this podcast more like our phone calls.
Yep. And that's kind of what we did.
No bullet points, no nothing. Like, we're still going to talk about the industry, but we're going to have more fun, hopefully entertain you more, and get our passion back to get this going again.
And I'm running out of time to edit, so I'm not going to edit as much. It's going to be more free.
So you're going to have to hear
me. Not that I edited a lot before.
Right.
But I was really more AOCD on stuff and how I wanted it to sound.
Yeah, so we're calling this a test, a freestyle test.
Yeah.
Where we're just like... hanging out, but we happen to have this thing on my head and this microphone in front of me, and who put this shit in front of me?
Here we are.
Here we are. Let's roll. So, anyways, I think that's probably enough for today, time-wise.
There you go. Here's one of the buttons. I don't know. It's fun to play with the buttons.
I didn't even hear anything, though.
No. Sorry.
That's okay.
Hopefully it's recorded then.
We'll edit the non-sound.
Are you like, what'd you hear? I didn't hear it. I don't know.
But yeah, stay in tune. We're going to try this format, try to get our spark back, and try to keep you guys interested. If you are still listening, or if you're just discovering us, I want to say thank you. We love you. We appreciate everything. Give us a thumbs up. Find us anywhere that podcast can be found. Email us at, what's our email address?
What is it? Cookandbartender@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you have any ideas. Sometimes we get so busy and burnt out that we our brains can't come up with new ideas. So,
nope. That's where this idea came from, because we're kind of like, we did everything we really want to talk about, but there has to be more.
Right. We'll save
it. Then we try to get guests here, but they're all busy too. So we're like, well, that doesn't work out.
Yeah.
So now we're just like, screw it. We'll just talk. Because we're good at talking.
Right. And we're probably boring people right now because we're just rambling. So anyways.
All right.
We love you all. Stay awesome. Have a great fucking week. And we'll be back at this next week, hopefully.
We will.
All right. Peace.
Peace, bro. Recorded at the world headquarters of the Cook and Bartender with Adam and Tiny.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Like, comment, follow, spread the word. We appreciate it. cookandbartender@gmail.com, cookandbartender on Facebook, or cookbartender@Instagram. Thank you.